Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
In the quiet and unsuspecting suburb of Cheshire, Connecticut, Jennifer Pettit and her two young daughters were murdered in a horrific home invasion. The crazy and extreme events of that shocking crime, along with police failures and untold personal dramas, shook a city to its core. A tragedy that could have been prevented in so many ways. The Cheshire murders today on the dark side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into a reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
The Cheshire, Connecticut home invasion murders occurred on July 23rd, 2007, when Joshua Komisarski and Stephen Hayes invaded the residence of the Pettit family in Cheshire, Connecticut. United States Dr. William Pettit was severely injured. His wife Jennifer Hawk Pettit and his two daughters, 17-year-old Haley Pettit and 11-year-old Michelanda Pettit, were all murdered. Upon entering the Pettit's home, Komisarski beat Dr. Pettit with a baseball bat. Ian Hayes then restrained Dr. Pettit in the basement. Hawk Pettit and her daughters were also restrained. Hayes later kidnapped Hawk Pettit and forced her to withdraw money at a bank. After returning to the home, he raped her and strangled her to death. Michelle was raped by Komisarski. Hayes and Komisarski then decided to burn down the house and destroy evidence. While Haley and Michelle were tied to their beds, the two men doused them and the house in gasoline. They then set the house on fire, leaving the daughters to die of smoke inhalation. The case garnered a significant amount of attention in Connecticut when the Hartford Courant cited it as possibly the most widely publicized crime in the state's history. The murders received national and international attention as well and had a significant impact on Connecticut's death penalty, ultimately delaying its abolition. Hayes was convicted of the murders and sentenced to death in 2010. Komisarski was convicted in 2011 and sentenced to death in 2012. In August 2015, the Connecticut Supreme Court, in defiance of the General Assembly, which had abolished the death penalty only for future cases, ruled that the death penalty was unconstitutional and commuted all death sentences to life imprisonment, even if that sentencing took place prior to the date that the death penalty was abolished. So this is a pretty dark one in terms of everything that happens. And it's not like there's a ton of people in volume here that our lives are taken, but the horrendous ways that these children were tortured and their lives were taken from them, and the wife and the husband, and he survived, but the man has to live with that fact and every single day know what happened to his wife and his children. It's just utterly insane and shocking how this all went down. What are your thoughts? It's the dark side of Wikipedia, everybody, by the way. Tony and Carol Hughes on today's episode.
You know, I've watched a few programs on this. I think there's been some Dateline or 2020 or something on this, and it's horrific. It's really hard to listen to.
Yeah.
And kind of when you said that you wanted, it's like, we're going to do this tonight. I'm like, okay.
Sorry.
You know, but it is. It's like, it's just, this is truly the dark side.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just, there's no, you can't even rationalize.
No.
How, why, any of that stuff. It's beyond what. You know, you and I have talked about Ted Bundy and stuff, like, and I don't know, for some reason I can kind of stay detached from that.
Yeah.
But I don't know, this one just really bothered me ever since I first heard about it years ago.
Just seeing, I don't know if
it's, and you know, when the guy, his whole family's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where I don't know if it's because, you know, we're seeing these things in so much more depth than we did in the past. And, you know, Ted Bundy, you know, you learn about him at the times where, you know, like some newspaper articles and things of that nature. And, you know, we didn't have 24-hour news networks or things like that. Is it now that we have all of these things and there's a documentary for anything now and all this information that we come so much closer to understanding or not understanding in some ways just how scary and freaky the human mind can be and just how dark places it can go to. And the other ones, you know, the Bundys and stuff, they were the villains out there, but now we know so much more about what makes the villains tick and we can recognize some of those traits in people around us.
I wonder too that, you know, like those Ted Bundy type people. They kind of have taken on this, you know, kind of collective fame that all of us seem to know about him. And it just doesn't seem as, I don't know, it's horrifying what he did. Yeah. I don't even know, like, he's not a good example.
Yeah.
But I don't know, when you hear, like, you know, just innocent people at home and something like this happens.
Yeah. It makes the world that much scarier of a place. Let's continue into the story here of the Cheshire murders. On the evening of Sunday, July 22nd, 2007, 48-year-old Jennifer Hawk Pettit and her 11-year-old daughter, Michelle Pettit, went to a local Stop and Shop grocery store in Cheshire, Connecticut. They picked up food for a family dinner. Michelle planned to prepare. During their trip to the grocery store, Joshua Komisarzyski noticed them and took interest and followed them home. Prosecutors argued at trial that he was motivated by money and his interest in Michelle, whom was later sexually assaulted. Shortly afterwards, Stephen Hayes sent a text message to Komisarzyski that read, "I'm chomping at the bit to get started. Need a margarita soon." Hayes then texted, "We still on?" Komisarzyski replied, "Yes." Hayes' next text asked, "Soon?" To which Komisarzyski replied, "I'm putting the kid to bed. Hold your horses." Hayes replied, "Dude, the horses want to get loose, LOL. According to Hayes' confession, he and Komisarzyski had planned to rob the Pettit house under the cover of darkness, leaving the family bound but otherwise unharmed. Both men attributed the grisly outcome to a change of plan. Upon their arrival in the early hours of July 23rd, they found Dr. Pettit asleep on a couch in the sunroom. Komisarzyski entered the basement through an unlocked door. Leaning on the basement stairs was a baseball bat. Komisarzyski then entered the sunroom and used the bat to strike Dr. Pettit four or five times. He and Hayes bound his wrists and ankles with plastic zip ties and rope. Dr. Pettit remembers one perpetrator telling the other, "If he moves, put two bullets in him." The children and their mother were then bound in their respective rooms. Hayes and Komisarzyski tied them to their wrists and ankles, and then placed their bedposts and placed pillowcases over their heads. After restraining the victims, Komisarjewski and Hayes ransacked the house for cash. They took Dr. Pettit to the basement when they tried to tie him to a support pole. Hayes and Komisarjewski continued ransacking the house for money but were not satisfied with what they found. They then found a check register with $40,000. They decided to steal $15,000. Surveillance video from a gas station shows Hayes purchasing $10 worth of gasoline in two cans that were taken from the Pettit home. After returning to the house, he took Hawk Pettit to the bank. The prosecution later claimed that this was evidence of premeditated murder. Hayes forced Hawk Pettit to withdraw $15,000 from her line of credit when the bank opened. Hawk Pettit informed the bank teller that men were holding her family hostage in their home and threatening to kill them all. Bank surveillance cameras captured the transaction. The bank manager called 911 and reported the situation to police while Hawk Pettit was still with the teller. The manager reported to the 911 dispatcher in real time as Hawk Pettit left the bank. The manager told the dispatcher that Hawk Pettit had indicated that the home invaders were being nice and that she believes they only wanted money. The Cheshire Police responded to the bank's report by assessing the situation and setting up a vehicle perimeter without revealing their presence. During this time, Hayes and Komisarjewski aggravated the nature of their crimes. Komisarjewski sexually assaulted the 11-year-old Michela, which he later confessed to in interrogation. Evidence that Komisarjewski raped Michela came from her autopsy, which state medical examiner Dr. Wayne Carver found semen in her body. Komisarjewski photographed his assault and rape on his cell phone. In his interrogation, he claimed that he believed Michela was 14 or 16. Forensic testing results showed that there was a bleach on Michela's clothes, indicating that Komisarjewski may have tried to eliminate DNA evidence from the assault. According to Hayes' confession, Komisarjewski provoked him into raping Hawk Pettit. Dr. Pettit was able to hear his wife's assault upstairs. He yelled up and heard one of the invaders say, "Don't worry, it's all going to be over in a couple of minutes." Dr. Pettit then managed to escape. He later testified in court that he felt a jolt of adrenaline and needed to escape after being told this. "I thought it's now or never because in my mind in that moment, I thought they were going to shoot all of us." He said in his confession that while he was raping Hawk Pettit in the living room floor, Komisarjewski entered and announced that Dr. Pettit had escaped. Hayes then strangled Hawk Pettit. He and Komisarjewski doused her lifeless body in pants in the house, including the daughters' bedrooms, with gasoline. While tied to their beds, both daughters were doused with gasoline as well. Investigators would later find the accelerant on the Pettit sisters' beds and the clothing that they were wearing. Hayes and Komisarjewski started a fire and fled the scene. Haley and Michela both died of smoke inhalation. Haley managed to escape her restraints and run out of her bedroom and into the hallway, where she collapsed and died. Her body was found at the top of the staircase. Third and fourth degree burns on her feet indicate she got very close to the fire around the time she died. The medical examiner who performed an autopsy on her could not determine if the burns occurred before or after her death. Michela's body was found in her bedroom. She was still in her bed, her hands tied to it and lower body hanging off of it. Like her older sister, Michela's burns may have occurred while she was still alive. Dr. Pettit had been able to free himself of his restraints, exit the house, and crawl to a neighbor's yard for help. The neighbor initially did not recognize Dr. Pettit due to the severity of his injuries. Meanwhile, Hayes and Komisarjewski fled the scene in the Pettit family car. They were immediately spotted by police surveillance, pursued and arrested one block away after crashing into a police car. The home invasion lasted 7 hours. Both Hayes and Komisarjewski confessed to the murders. Detectives testified that Hayes smelled of gasoline, and throughout his interrogation, each assailant claimed that the other was the driving force and the mastermind behind the invasion. Komisarjewski also blamed Dr. Pettit for the murders. In Komisarjewski's diary, which was later entered into evidence, he called Dr. Pettit a coward and claimed that he could have saved his family if he wanted to. Dear Diary, that just seems like kind of a fucked up thing to believe, but you gotta believe these people believe the shit they believe.
Well, you know, and so they say they were going in for a home invasion, but yet you took gasoline, so you had a backup plan, mm-hmm. I guess. If it all goes crazy, we're gonna burn it down.
Yeah.
But I just think, I think they probably have more in mind all along.
Mm-hmm.
you know, you don't just, oh, a home invasion, we're going to go steal some shit. Oh, look, a baseball bat. Let's beat the crap out of somebody with it.
Yeah.
Oh, people like that. Oh, it just pisses me off.
It's
her 7 hours.
Yeah. There's so many weird things about the case, you know, and just how this all went down. And it's just, it's creepy if you look at some like the surveillance video and stuff from the bank where the mom had to go and she was trying to get money and she was scared to death and she gets back home and murdered and raped. And it's just...
She thought she was doing what she could to save her family. And maybe if she goes through with that, like, just take the damn money and go.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean...
They don't want to get caught.
They don't, and she's trying to save her children, and she's going to put herself in the line of fire, you know, for any, you know, whatever, you know, she needs to for the kids. And if she thinks that that's the best route, you know, you can't blame her. She doesn't know exactly what's going to happen yet.
She has no choice.
No, she doesn't.
No. But, you know, as a mom or anybody, you would say, you know what? I'll drive you myself to go get all the money I have. Leave us alone.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just... I'll give you all the money I got. But that wasn't, I mean, that was part of what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
They'd have to have some kind of sick enjoyment.
Yeah, I mean, you would. I mean, these people clearly had so many things wrong with them. I mean, just rap sheets that went way back and, you know, everything, you know, ends up stemming from some sort of abuse and whatnot. But as they became adults, there was no helping them, and they turned into these maniacs that were capable of doing something just that extreme. And what, you know, I don't know what the hell that is in someone that allows them to do that, but it's just frightening.
Kind of, and we've talked about this before. Like, I can't say I'm a big proponent of the death penalty, but mm-hmm. then when I hear something like this, I'm like, well,
yeah,
you should be dead. Like, you can't, like, how, there's no redeeming you, or there's no helping somebody, or like they're miraculously, oh, I see my evil ways.
Exactly. I mean, I'm not super a big proponent of it, but with something like this, I have no problem with it. It's like,
I just don't know. I mean, I don't know how. I mean, if I was related to that family or friends with them,
mm-hmm.
I mean, that puts it all into a different perspective. You know, it's easy to say one thing about that until you've lived a life that's really been affected by a horrific crime.
In the interviews that I was watching today on the HBO doc about this, they were interviewing the brothers of one of these guys, and their brothers are both like, yeah, he did this to me when I was a kid and that to me. And just, he was just always kind of off. And they're both like, he should get the death penalty. He should be removed from this earth. And it's like, fuck, these people are, you know, saying this, your brothers, you should probably be removed from this earth. And even he, I believe, they were both at some point, I believe, were like, okay, please kill us. But then it's like the state is going to delay it. And then from what I understand from the intro, it's they're never going to be killed in prison unless someone kills them in prison. So,
which I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, that exactly. I have no idea. Let's continue into the case and learn more about the killers themselves. Stephen J. Hayes, born in 1963 in Homestead, Florida, was convicted as an adult for the first time in 1980. At age 16. He was paroled in 82, but violated it 7 weeks later. During the time between this incident and the Cheshire murders, Hayes was arrested nearly 30 times. He spent most of his time incarcerated. Hayes' last arrest before the Cheshire murders was in 2004 after he smashed a car window with a rock and a stone and stole a woman's purse. He was paroled in 2006 and was sent to the Silliman Halfway House where he met Commissar Jeske. Hayes was found guilty on 16 of 17 counts related to the Cheshire murders on October 15, 2010. On November 8, 2010, the jury returned with a recommendation for him to be executed. He was formally sentenced to death by Superior Court Judge John C. Blue on December 2, 2010. Hayes was an inmate of the Connecticut Department of Corrections. Subsequent to sentencing for the Pettit murders and up until August 16, 2016, when he was transferred to a correctional facility in Pennsylvania as part of an interstate corrections compact, he was incarcerated in the Northern Correctional Institution, which housed the state's death row for men in Saunders, Connecticut. The method of execution employed by Connecticut was lethal injection, and the state execution chamber was located in the Osborne Correctional Institution in Somers. This sentence became an automatic life sentence when Connecticut abolished the death penalty in 2015. Joshua A. Komisarzynski was Hayes' co-conspirator in the home invasion and the murders. He was born to a 16-year-old girl impregnated by a mechanic who was barely out of his teens. According to adoption officials, he was adopted by Benedict Komisarzynski, the son of a theatrical director, Theodore Komisarzynski, and dancer Esterine Strudel, and his wife, Jude. In the early 1900s, Komisarzynski's sister accused him of sexually Komisarzynski's sister accused him of sexually assaulting her. During the penalty phase of his trial, Komisarzynski's father conceded that this was probably true. Komisarzynski committed his first burglary when he was 14. In 2002, he was arrested for 18 home invasions. Komisarzynski's defense attorney at the time says that Komisarzynski told him about every burglary he committed in perfect detail. Komisarzynski told his attorney that after robbing the houses, he would go to the rooms where the occupants were sleeping and listen to them breathe. He did this because he enjoyed the feeling of invading people's homes and violating their security. Komisarzynski was convicted of 12 counts of burglary in December of 2002. He was sentenced to 9 years in prison with 6 years of special parole. During sentencing, Judge James Bentivenga described him as a calculated, cold-blooded predator. Komisarzynski was paroled in April of 2007. Under Connecticut law, prosecutors were supposed to send the parole board a transcript of the sentencing proceeding, but the parole board that released Komisarzynski never received the transcript and was not aware of all the details regarding his case. After being paroled, Komisarzynski stayed at the Silliman Halfway House, where he met Hayes. Komisarzynski remained incarcerated at the Walker Reception Center in lieu of a $15 million bond until his conviction. His trial began on September 9, 2011, and on October 13, 2011, he was convicted on all 17 counts. On December 9, 2011, the jury recommended the death penalty. On January 27, 2012, Judge John Blue sentenced Komisarzynski to death by lethal injection. His sentence also became an automatic life sentence when Connecticut abolished the death penalty in 2015. As of August 16, 2016, both Hayes and Komisarzynski were transferred to separate prison facilities in Pennsylvania to serve their life sentences. According to Connecticut state prison officials, the transfer was done as part of an interstate corrections compact due to reasons pertaining to safety and security. On August 18th, after being transferred, Komisarzynski attempted to commit suicide by hanging himself. Hayes is currently incarcerated at the State Correctional Institution, Green, a supermax prison in Franklin Township, Greene County, Pennsylvania. Komisarzynski is incarcerated in the State Correctional Institution, Phoenix, in Skipatic Township, Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Komisarzynski is currently seeking a retrial. Prior to the first trial, his attorneys were not provided with recordings that he says could have helped his case, as they were destroyed due to a lightning strike in 2010. Backups were later found in 2014 at Cheshire Town Hall. Komisarzynski's attorneys are arguing that the recordings could have helped bolster their argument that the police were inadequate in their response and therefore raised questions about the credibility of their testimony against him. Komisarzynski also argues that he did not receive a fair trial due to the location it was held in. Judge John Blue denied a request by defense attorneys for a trial to be moved to New Haven to Stamford. Komisarzynski claims that there was so much prejudice against him in New Haven that it was not possible for him to receive a fair trial there. In September of 2019, it was revealed that the case would be heard by the Connecticut Supreme Court. The court heard oral arguments in October of 2019. In October of 2019, Hayes claimed to be transgender and was to be undergoing hormone therapy in prison as part of his transition into a woman. Hayes' trial began on September 13, 2010. The jury was composed of 7 women and 5 men. Hayes' defense attorneys argued that Komisarzynski was a mastermind behind the home invasion. He was responsible for the escalating and violent nature of the crime at every critical point. Prosecutors argued that both perpetrators shared equal responsibility. Following the completion of the trial, the jury deliberated for about 5 hours and reached a guilty verdict on October 5th. The sentencing phase of the trial began on October 18th, 2010, during which the jurors had to decide if Hayes should be executed or imprisoned for life. Deliberations began on November 5th. The first day of deliberations ended with the jury split over whether to recommend life, in prison, or death. The second day of these deliberations began on November 6th. Defense attorney Thomas Altman told the jury that a sentence of a life in life prison would be the harshest possible punishment for his client Hayes, because he was so tormented by his crimes and would be isolated in prison. Life in prison without the possibility of release is the harshest penalty, Altman said. It's a fate worse than death. If you want to end his misery, put him to death. If you want him to suffer and carry that burden forever, the guilt, the shame, the humiliation, sentence him to life without the possibility of release. On November 8, 2010, the jury returned with a recommendation that Hayes be executed. The jury recommended a death sentence on each of the six capital felony counts for which Hayes was convicted. In the sentencing phase, the jury had deliberated for about 17 hours. Over the course of the day, 4 days before reaching the decision, jurors later reported that they deliberated over a long period of time so that they could weigh all the evidence properly. Hayes had attempted to negotiate a life sentence in a plea bargain. The prosecutors chose to take the case to trial so that he could get a death penalty. After the verdict, his defense attorney stated, Hayes smiled upon hearing the jury's recommendation of a death sentence. He then added, he's thrilled. That's what he's wanted all along. During a press conference after the verdict, Dr. Pettit stated, we all know that God will be the final arbiter, and I think the defense faces far more serious punishments with the Lord than he came ever to face from mankind. He also spoke about his family, saying, Michelle was an 11-year-old little girl tortured and killed in her own bedroom, surrounded by stuffed animals. Haley had a great future. She was a strong and courageous person. And Jennifer helped so many kids. For the first time in the state history, the Connecticut State Judicial Branch offered post-traumatic stress to assist and assistance to jurors who served for 2 months on the triple murder trial because they had been required to look at disturbing images and hear grisly testimony. On December 2nd, 2010, Hayes apologized for the pain and suffering he had caused the Pettit family and added that death for me will be a welcome relief, and I hope it will bring some peace and comfort to those who have hurt so much. Judge John Blue formally imposed 6 death sentences, one for each of the capital charges. Blue then added a sentence of 106 years for other crimes Hayes committed during the home invasion, including kidnapping, burglary, and assault, before finishing with, this is a terrible sentence, but is, in truth, a sentence you wrote for yourself in flames. May God have mercy on your soul. The judge also gave Hayes an official execution date of May 27, 2011. Blue said that this date was a formality because if Hayes appealed his case, his execution could be delayed for decades. His death sentence became a life sentence in August of 2015 when the state abolished the death penalty. Commissar Jeske's trial is what we'll be going into next. Thoughts on all of that part of the story?
There are several thoughts.
Yes.
One, like 2 months of listening to that for those jurors, I can't imagine. Like I have said before that I do want to sit on a jury at some point, but I would never want to sit on a jury like that. That's horrific.
No.
And then the other guy, whose name I can't pronounce.
Commissar Jeske.
Great job with it. Yeah. What? Like, then he, all of a sudden, after all that, he's transgender?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know where that suddenly plays in, but that kind of came out of nowhere. Like,
I was, like, listening along, and then all of a sudden, like, what? Oh, yeah, by the way, transgender.
I mean, that's fine, but it just kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
From everything that we were talking about. It's like, well, okay. But I don't know how that would necessarily tie in, though, either. But an interesting footnote to the story, nonetheless. Let's get into the last portion of this here before we wrap everything up for the day of the Cheshire murder case. Commissar Jeske's attorneys offered for him to plead guilty in exchange for a life sentence, but prosecutors took the case to trial in order to give him the death penalty. Commissar Jeske's trial began on September 19, 2011. His attorneys blamed Hayes for the murders, arguing that he was the criminal mastermind, while the client was a confused and easily led man who did not intend to kill anyone. Commissar Jeske was found guilty on October 13, 2011. On December 9, 2011, the jury recommended the death penalty. On January 27, 2012, Commissar Jeske was sentenced to death by lethal injection. During the hearing, Judge Blue said, "This is a terrible sentence, but it's one you wrote for yourself with the deeds of an unimaginable whore and savagery." Commissar Jeske made a statement during the sentencing hearing. He spoke about the shame, disappointment, and hurt he had caused, saying, "I will never find peace within. My life will be a continuation of the hurt I caused. The clock is now ticking, and I owe a debt I cannot repay." Though he acknowledged taking part in the crime, he insisted that he did not intend to kill anyone, saying, "Millions have judged me guilty of capital offenses I did not commit. I did not intend for those women to die. They were never supposed to lose their lives. I don't need 12 people to tell me what I'm guilty or not guilty of. None of them were there that morning. I know my responsibilities. I will bear them as I should. What I cannot do is claim responsibility for the actions of another." He spoke about how the trial affected him, saying that he has become quite comfortable in the face of hatred and bigotry, and said that the jury who recommended the death penalty for him believed me so worthless, even my very existence is deemed intolerable. He also said that forgiveness was not his to have, and he needed to forgive his worst enemy himself. During his victim impact statement, Dr. Pettit described the crime as his personal Holocaust and said, "I have a difficult time sleeping and trusting anymore. I hope to continue to honor my family. I push forward in the hope that good will overcome evil." Blue said July 20th, 2012 is Commissar Jeske's execution date. As with Hayes, Commissar Jeske's death sentence was turned into a life sentence in August of 2015. Subsequent developments in Connecticut capital punishment law. Capital punishment in Connecticut and the Cheshire home invasion murders had a significant impact on those laws regarding the death penalty and on the debate surrounding the topic. The case motivated proponents of Connecticut's death penalty and was cited as a reason that any repeal of the capital punishment in the state should not be extended to those already on death row. The Hartford court listed the Cheshire murders and the subsequent death penalty repeal as some of the top stories that shaped the 2010s. The Cheshire home invasion murder and the subsequent repeal of the death penalty dominated the political and criminal justice landscapes in Connecticut for the first half of the decade. The murders halted momentum to end the state's death penalty and ultimately delayed that abolition. In 2009, the Connecticut General Assembly sent legislation to abolish the state's death penalty to Governor M. Jody Rell, obstinately to be signed into law. However, on June 5, 2009, Rell vetoed the bill, instead cited the Cheshire murders as an exemplary reason for doing so. On November 8, 2010, Rell issued the following statement regarding the jury's recommendation of a sentence of death for Hayes. "The crimes that were committed on that brutal July night were so far out of the range of normal understanding that now, more than 3 years later, we still find it difficult to accept that they happened in one of our communities. I've long believed that there are certain crimes that are so heinous, so depraved, that society is best served by imposing the ultimate sanctions on the criminal. Stephen Hayes stands convicted of such crimes, and today the jury has recommended that he should be subjected to the death penalty, and I agree." On April 11, 2012, the Connecticut House of Representatives voted to repeal capital punishment for future cases, leaving past death sentences in place. The Connecticut Senate has already voted the bill. On April 25th, Governor Dan Malloy signed the bill into law. In August of 2015, the Connecticut Supreme Court declared all capital punishment inconsistent with the state constitution, effectively commuting the killers' sentences to life imprisonment. The home invasion murders led to immediate calls for reforms to Connecticut's criminal justice system. On July 31st, 2007, Governor Rell ordered electronic monitoring of paroled burglars. On September 21st, she banned parole for violent offenders and ordered a review of convicts already on parole. On July 31st, Governor Rell called for a special session to consider tougher crime legislation, and on August 31st, she appointed a task force to examine Connecticut's criminal justice system. On January 25th, 2008, Rell signed a 43-page bipartisan crime bill. Home invasion became a new class of crime, which could result in prison sentences of up to 25 years. The bill also paid for an upgrade to computer systems for law enforcement agencies. In 2007, John Carpenter, an employee of the Chase Collegiate School, ran the New York City Marathon, raising $8,554 for Miles for Michela, a campaign, a scholarship benefit. The same year, Dr. Pettit established the Michela Rosa Pettit 14 Scholarship Fund for a Chase Collegiate School. He also established the Haley's Hope and Michela's Miracle MS Memorial Fund. On January 6, 2008, over 130,000 luminary candles were lit in front of thousands of homes across Cheshire. In Cheshire, Lights of Hope, a fundraiser for multiple sclerosis and a tribute to the Pettit family. Funded by a local couple, Don and Jennifer Walsh, the event raised over $100,000 for Haley's Hope and Michelle's Miracle Memorial Funds. The murders and their aftermath have been featured on many programs, Dateline and The Oprah Winfrey Show. Do a full-hour episode about the murders of the family and the work of the Pettit Family Foundation. So, that's how we wrap that story up.
At least, I mean, there's something positive that came from it, but it's just like it shouldn't have been necessary.
No, I mean, there is just so many things in this case, and our criminal justice system, we could stand to take a look at that a little bit more, especially state by state, because some of it is insane when you see. But what do you do? Do you add more? I mean, when you have people that have rap sheets like that, do they just stay in more? Even if they've spent the time for the last crime, but, you know, odds are they're going to commit more?
I have thought about that. Like, I don't know the answer.
Yeah.
There are people. I mean, what is prison for? Should it be a reform? Or is it simply a punishment? Because by making prison simply a punishment.
Yeah.
Then those people are going to come out and still be criminals.
Maybe that is the answer right there. If they can make them more into reforming institutions than they are, you would have less of the recidivism of returning to prison. At least I would think that would help with that. But I don't know. Maybe that's, I don't know if that's ever been studied or anything like that to show it.
I mean, then there, none of it makes sense.
I mean, it is a for-profit system.
A guy could end up in prison for 20 years for selling oxycodone or Oxycontin, whichever it was, and then the manufacturers of that drug can walk away with billions of dollars.
And make
nothing makes sense.
Make the antidote drug for it and charge a fortune for that then, too. Yeah.
But, like, in this case, when these people actually are guilty and committed this crime. Mm-hmm. That's when I have that problem with it. It's like, absolutely, if they should be locked up forever. Because I don't know that you can reform those people.
You can't.
I just think there are variations in crimes that need to be looked at differently.
Yeah.
You know, not 25 years for, I don't know. You know what I mean?
Dumb shit.
It's like, it's just so hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they found, you know, a drug on you in a very small quantity or something, but then it was, you
know. Oh my God. If anybody's in prison for an ounce of weed, that makes no sense.
Exactly. Like that sort of shit is just pointless. So,
But like what those guys did, that's just this whole other level of evilness.
Uh-huh.
And like, you can't reform a person who could do that. And even if you said, we reformed him, or did you? I mean, I would never trust him.
Well, in all the other times that they had been imprisoned, did they ever get reformed then? No. I mean, it's a
prison is a reform.
Well, it's just like arrested 30 some times. I'm sorry, this person is very broken. Like, this is not going to end until it doesn't end well. And
because he keeps getting out and getting away with it. And, you know, so then I think there's loopholes in the system. And, you know, the fact that you could commit a horrific crime and then it's like, but the tapes that somehow got damaged in the, what was it, a lightning strike or electrical fire, whatever it was, that's going to prove that what?
It proves it was a technicality and they're trying to discredit the police.
Yeah.
And
there's a witness.
Yeah. So, it's trying to get off basically on a technicality is what it is.
Yeah.
And I don't know how, I mean, the idea of being an attorney has always fascinated me, but I don't know. I could never do anything like that. Where you, I mean, no matter what, you got to represent your client. I mean, I suppose you have a choice in who your clients are, but I could never imagine being a person that would, in any sort of way, be able to represent that. And
then on the other side of it, I have a friend who was a district attorney. I think she still is in another county. She moved away. So I'm like, well, I'd want to be the prosecutor until I heard the shit that she had to see. I would never be able to sleep again.
No.
Like some of the stuff, like she's the one who flashes the badge and goes into the crime scene. And I'm like, yeah. She told me some stories. There's no way.
Yeah.
You know, and I respect anyone. And I truly do believe, though, everyone deserves a lawyer and should be represented in court. There's so many people arrested for crimes they didn't do.
Sure.
But there are certain crimes that fall outside of that category.
Yeah.
Like this.
At this point, it's like, you're on your own.
Exactly. Sorry. You know, you don't even get a trial. You're just going in this slammer forever.
Like, we found you doing this. So you're guilty. Thank you. And have a nice life. Yeah, what a messed up story. But that is the dark side of Wikipedia. And that's what we do here.
Next week, let's do some not quite so dark.
Cosby.
I don't know. Which is also really freaking
really fucking dark. Yeah, I know. I'll figure it out. We'll do something else not quite as dark. Less murders, less fire or something. I don't know. If you like the show, keep us on the air and go ahead and press the subscribe button and let your friends know that we exist. Leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts. We greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Carol and all of us at Dark Side of Wikipedia, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
The holidays are here, and that means it's the most wonderful time of the year to save with Rakuten. Use Rakuten to stack cash back at your favorite stores on top of holiday sales. That's savings on savings. With Rakuten, you can get cash back on gifts for everyone on your list. From toys for the kids, to kitchen gear for the person who loves to cook, to electronics for everyone. You can even save on something for yourself. Just shop the stores you love, and cashback is automatically added to your account. And you can get paid with gift cards, PayPal, or check. Or eligible American Express card members can even choose to earn membership rewards points instead of cashback. It's truly a no-brainer. Join for free today and get a new member bonus after minimum qualifying purchases. Just go to Rakuten.com, download the app, or install the browser extension. That's Rakuten. Terms and conditions apply.
Extra Value Meals are back. For just $5, get a savory and sweet sausage, egg, and cheese McGriddles, plus hash browns and a coffee. Only at McDonald's.
For limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Prices may be higher in Hawaii, Alaska, and California, and for delivery.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right.